in the catacombs.
Who is this great hero?
His countenance is the most.
Davros.
Hey cats, how are ya? Hope you're doing well. We're here. It's another episode of Who's to Review, episode 5 in fact. Not gonna lie, pretty excited, a new episode of Who's to Review, a new doctor, but there's something that has stayed the same, and that's none other than my core partner in crime, your host, Tom Denham.
Hello there, dogs.
Tom, what were your thoughts going in, and what are we reviewing today?
Well, today I am proud to say we are reviewing none other than Revelation of the Daleks, which is the finale story of season 22. Personally, I love this story. I think it's a really ripaway to finish off a season of Doctor Who. I personally love it for its black comedy. It's very, very dark. That's one of the things I just love about Doctor Who altogether, because it does dark so well.
I was very surprised how dark this episode was at parts, actually.
Yeah.
A lot of murder. And even this episode had a weird fascination with sharp objects. Did you get that? Like, it was almost uncomfortable at times.
It did, yeah. There were lots of moments where you were kind of sitting on the edge of your seat, whether it made you feel uncomfortable from the scene where Jobu was trying to kiss Perry, or whether it was Davros talking to Tass and Becca.
Yeah, that's right. It was just very, I loved how surprising it was with the stabbing. But before we get too much into the plot, see, we're getting too excited already.
I know.
I think it's worth actually reading what the episode's about before we discuss key parts of it. So I better get onto that right away.
Case and flip it over to the synopsis on the back.
That's right, everybody. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And go.
And go. The Doctor and Perry arrive on the planet Necros, home of tranquil repose, a funeral home for the galaxy's elite. But is this the Doctor's own final resting place? And why do Daleks guard the inner sanctums of the perpetually interred? Perhaps the great healer will have the answers. Now, I must say, I got a great laugh at the start of this episode. So the Doctor and Perry, they arrive on Necros. And Perry, she's walked into the snow, she's having a bit of a look around, and the Doctor comes out and he goes, "How do I look?" And in my mind, I thought, "You look bloody stupid," because I can't stand his costume. It rubs me the wrong way.
It's one of the most jarring things about his era, and the love-hate relationship I have with this time in Doctor Who. Colin was just trying his hardest, but he was just giving lots of shit about, like, what was going on. They gave him the most dreadful costume ever when they said, "Okay, what do you want to wear?" And he goes, "I'd like to go all black." And they said, "Actually, we might get back to you. We'll talk to the costume department." And they ended up giving him pretty much what is a clown costume.
Oh, essentially. It just looks ridiculous.
And I think one of the other things that really jarred this era was the people who were kind of throwing him around. He was trying to do a good show, and he got on the wrong end of the stick.
Isn't it funny though, with the costume that he requested, that my favourite Doctor, Christopher Eccleston, just so happens to get that exact design costume.
That's what Colin Baker says. Every convention he goes to, whenever he gets asked about the bloody coat, he says, I want what Christopher Eccleston had.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Christopher Eccleston won out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just one thing. But luckily, the episode doesn't suffer because of the coat, and nor does his run.
Not at all, no.
But it does jar me just a little bit.
It does, yeah. And once we get to go off topic a little bit, once we get to the Big Finish audios, they do change the costume for him, which makes it so much more...
Oh, I'm glad to hear better. That.
They give him a blue coat instead.
Oh, jeez, yeah, that's fantastic. Now, this was written by Eric Saward.
Saywood.
This was written by Eric Saywood.
It was.
Now, has he wrote anything else for Doctor Who?
Yes, I believe the first story he wrote was The Visitation, which is Peter Davison story, yeah, which I do believe is a good story. And I personally like Eric Saywood's writing. I know people who don't like his writing, but I'm on the left field here. I'm going to say I enjoy Eric Saywood as a writer for Doctor Who.
Now, he copped a bit on this, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah. I heard that he was a little bit controversial at the time.
Yep.
With the director and some of the production crew.
Yeah, yeah, with John Nathan Turner, who was the producer at the time. They didn't get along too well.
They just didn't get along at all, for whatever reason. And he was never hired again, was he, after this?
Yeah, I think the problem was, I think he just decided he had enough and he went off to do his own thing.
Yeah, that was it.
Yep.
Just
that was parting of the ways. Yeah. I think once you get to season 23, which is the whole Trial of a Time Lord story arc, you can really tell that they all don't want to be there. They're all kind of, sitting very uncomfortably next to each other on a bus. So, I guess that's one of the jarring things, again, about Colin Baker's era, that they're all kind of a bit bitter about what's going on.
Yeah, it wasn't a very kind of stable, happy family type of relationship that was going on.
Whereas you look at, like, the golden age of Doctor Who, if you look at the 70s, if you look at, like, John Pertwee's time with Katie Manning and Roger Delgado, or if you look at Tom Baker with Liz Sladen and Ian Martyr and all those people, they're all having a good time.
Yeah, that's excellent.
You look here and it's a different kettle of fish.
It is. Yeah. It is. Now, this was very interesting because when you look at this, and I asked you the question, I said, all right, great, let's watch it. How many parts? And you said two. Mm. And I looked at you very strangely. But then I realised, hang on, these are 45-minute parts. Explain this to me. Why all of a sudden have we gone for 22 seasons and now, for whatever reason, near the end of season 22, we're just getting 45 parts?
I believe
45-minute parts.
I think if my memory serves correct, they just wanted to rejig the format. And they did that for all of this season, bar one story, which was the two Doctors. I do think it works for these stories, because I reckon with the 25 minutes, you only get such a short amount of time to introduce everything, and then you got to go cliffhanger ending. But with stories like Revelation and Time Lash, I'm probably the very few who likes Time Lash. But they have a lot more breathing space, which I really, really, really savour.
Yeah, I think it worked perfectly for this one.
Yeah.
Because there were so many characters in this, and they were all important. There were multiple arcs of different storylines branching off each other here.
Yeah.
And I felt with that 45 minutes, even just that first part, it set it up beautifully.
It did, yeah. We already, by the first part, we knew who everyone was, where it was set, what's going on, and we had a bit of a shoddy cliffhanger, but we knew kind of what to expect for the next story.
We did, yes.
And I think once we got to episode two, it just went above and beyond.
Yeah, it really excelled, actually.
It
lifted, I think, even though the first part was fine.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. But the second part, I was thinking, yeah.
It's a whole lot better.
Yeah. Now, let's have a look at the cast. Let's focus on the cast in this story. So, the regulars, we have Colin Baker as the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your thoughts on Colin overall, Tom?
Well, I personally love Colin. I love him for the reason that he tried. He's the little engine that could in this vein. His Doctor, if you forget about the coat, he is greater on the inside. And I really think Revelation is one of those stories where he excels in his character. But we were talking about this before. He's very kind of overshadowed by the rest of the cast here because they're getting more of the stage.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I couldn't really care less about him in this story for whatever reason.
Yeah.
He just, I don't know. I'm on the fence with Colin Baker massively at this point in time.
Yeah.
Now, it's only episode 5 and we're going to review all his stories.
Eventually, yes.
Eventually. Mm. But at this point in time, I think he might be my least favourite Doctor.
That's fair enough.
I have to say.
It's a bit of a common answer. Like, when people say, who's your favourite Doctor? They go, oh, John Pertwee or Tom Baker or Patrick Troughton. Now, who's your least favourite Doctor? Oh, definitely Colin Baker.
Colin Baker, yeah.
It was either always Colin Baker or Sylvester McCoy.
Mm. Mm. And I'm putting the coat aside. Even just watching his acting, I just think he's a little bit more wooden than some of the others. I notice he doesn't have much facial expressions with certain lines.
No.
He's kind of a bit straight-faced. I'm not sure. I'm just not sure yet.
I think one of the main differences between his acting and some of the other Doctor's acting is that Colin is more of a stage actor. And he's had a lot of history on stage. And I guess that's where his strong point is. And you can really see that in his physical acting here. He's very big with his actions. Like, he'll wave his arms around and he'll do these big steps and he'll plant his feet in the ground. And I reckon stage is where he's supposed to be at. I think his presence as the Doctor is good, but I guess if the whole Colin Baker run was a series of stage plays, I'd go see that.
Yeah. Bigger and better, you reckon?
I think so.
Oh, that's excellent.
So it was great that he got the chance in 1990 to do the Ultimate Venture stage play. Him and John Pertwee and David Banks alternated as Doctor in a series of stage plays. So that was fun.
Oh, would have been excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, if only we can go back in time.
Yeah. Whole thing's on YouTube. It's worth watching.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Might have to have a look at that. Perry is the companion in this run.
Yes.
Thoughts on Perry?
Well, she's not my favourite companion. I do think she had better stories. I think her best stories would have been with Davison.
Right.
And I definitely think her best story with Colin would have been Vengeance on Varos.
Well, it's interesting because I'd only seen Attack of the Cybermen.
Yep.
And yet I did not remember her at all. And I'd only only seen that story maybe a year ago. But here, I quite enjoyed her performance, even though the American accent might be seen as a little bit off, I guess. It's not terrible.
No.
But I don't know. I think she does the job fairly well.
Were there any specific highlights for you in Perry's acting?
I don't think she got the showcase enough, to be honest. I kind of liked where she got taken hostage for that quick bit near the end.
You know what I wanted to see more of? I wanted to see more of that instability or that uncomfortableness between her and Jobel.
Yeah, that was good. They hinted at that.
Yeah, but it was played by Clive Swift.
That's right. He was excellent too.
I think so. If we saw more of that, this could have gone a whole lot darker, I reckon.
Yeah, it could have gone up another notch. Maybe another 45-minute part and we could have really explored that.
If
it had
been a three-parter, there could be... I could definitely, like, imagine it moving away from, like, the whole kids show that it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
It could have, like, been a bit more suggestive
just
of
transformed,
sleeping
yeah.
in bed or something.
Oh,
but
my
goodness. So, yeah, just as those possibilities, just put a completely different spin on it.
Yeah, oh, it would have been fascinating. But, yeah, that was one thing, too. They kind of really hinted at there being a bit of miscommunication there.
Yeah.
Would have been awesome to have seen them take that a little bit further.
No, I have to say, I need to ask you something, Ben.
Okay.
What were your thoughts on Alexei Sayle as the DJ?
Okay, here we go. All right. I have some thoughts on this. Now, Alexei Sayle is from The Young Ones fame.
Yep.
Great show. Which he played the, I've gone blank.
The Landlord.
The Landlord, yes, of course.
And he'd always appear as just lots of different characters, which was hilarious. And he'd break the 4-4 and he goes, no, I never used to be an actor. And he'd just go on like a side story for like 5 or so minutes in the show.
I appreciate the fact that they got in, you know, a big name for this episode. That's great. That's excellent. But I could not stand this character.
Really?
At all. I absolutely hated it. And I kept my mouth shut the whole time. So I'm just letting you know now. He just drove me insane.
Were there any particular reasons why he drove you up the wall?
Well, I mean, fair enough that he's giving like a commentary. It's more of a commentary to the audience to kind of let us know what's going on, like a narration of some sort. But the fact of the matter was is that it just, the camera just stayed static on his face for so long, and it got really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it just made the whole thing feel really cheesy to me. And I know that sounds really silly, because Colin Baker's run is kind of cheesy.
It is, yeah.
But, oh, gosh, no, I wasn't a fan of this at all. The DJ actually took a point off my rating.
Really?
Yeah.
If this were a new series episode of Doctor Who, say with, hypothetically, if it was with Eccleston, how do you reckon they would have directed it differently?
Oh, I think definitely in a much more serious tone.
Yeah. If you were the director of this story and you were directing this scene with Alexis Sayre as the DJ, how would have you have done it?
I would have done it in a far more serious, stern kind of manner. You got to remember, all these like organisations, even with like Davros, and then you've got all the other henchmen and everything like that, they all conducted themselves in a very strict and formal type manner.
Yeah.
Which maybe that explains why they made this DJ so much more energetic and crazy.
A bit loony.
But yeah, definitely loony. But oh, I didn't appreciate it at all.
Yeah.
So no, I would have made him a lot more subtle in his delivery, a lot more serious, a lot more stern. Yeah. And more of just like a radio host letting the audience know what's going on instead of a wacky, crazy kind of...
Yeah.
Oh, nah.
And now we tune back into ABC Radio 774 to let you know there's some disturbances going on in the outside world.
Exactly. I would have much preferred that. I know a lot of people would probably think that's boring, but did you like him? Because I... No, I just hated him.
I definitely think... I can see why you don't like him. I definitely like him because I have the foreknowledge of knowing him as... the landlord from the other ones. But that's probably maybe why.
But we have to take that aside for a second. You've never seen this guy before, right?
Yeah.
Did you like that character in this episode? Did it add to your enjoyment?
I think it did, to be honest.
Right, okay, that's okay. We're just going to have to agree to disagree on that one.
Yeah.
Now, two massive things in this story, and they're two elements of Doctor Who that are important. Mm-hmm. And finally, they've come to Who's to Review in episode 5. Firstly, the Daleks.
Yes!
On Who's to Review. And secondly, Davros.
Yes.
Yes. Mm. Now, for those who don't know, Tom does a killer Davros impression. And personally, I think it's time that you bust it out, Tom. You've been waiting
you reckon?
5 episodes to do it.
Yep.
So I think we're going to have to hear it.
No! Take him! He is the sworn enemy of the Daleks! He is the Doctor!
No!
His image does not compute with the known appearance of the Doctor!
He's regenerated, you fool!
He will be held prisoner until we can verify if you are correct! You will come with us or be exterminated here!
You have no heart to lust of me! I shall return!
Oh, well done, Tom. Oh, excellent stuff. But now that you got that out of your system...
Have a glass of water.
Have a bit of a breather. It's probably time that we get back to the episode. Now, Davros was a very core part of this story.
He was.
He was the main...
The great healer.
He is the great healer. And I love the character of Davros, personally. Yeah. Even just the model, the look of Davros, everything about him. And he's got a great voice, which you pulled off beautifully.
Oh, thank you.
Now, he's landed in Necros.
Mm-hmm.
But why?
So he's landed to Tranquil Repose, where all these people were in suspended animation or cryogenically frozen. And he started using the human parts for food sources for planets in famine. But his grander scheme is to use the human parts to make Daleks.
Ah, nice work, Tom. I'm glad you're paying attention to the episode. that's good.
And this is quite a bit of a controversial stir here, because this is the first story where there are human plus Dalek.
Yes, that's right. Mm. And we actually see introducing like two other new characters, Natasha.
Yes.
And that other gentleman that isn't named very often at all in the episode for whatever reason.
Mm.
And they come across a human Dalek, who happened to be Natasha's father.
That's right. I think this scene altogether is my favourite scene in
It was pretty cool. I love the lighting too. It was very dark and there was just, you know, some low light and just some interesting stuff there. And the reveal to this was excellent.
The thing that drove me about this scene was the build-up that Natasha's father did when he was speaking very hollowly at the start, and then he slowly but surely became a Dalek.
Yeah, it was a bit of a revelation, wasn't it? Yeah. You could even say it was a bit of a revelation of the Daleks.
Boodum.
But no, it was cool. I really dug it. It was in the... I think it came about three quarters into the first part of the episode.
Yep.
But oh, it was a nice... I think it was a good change of pace there. It was. Because it was going a little bit too quick. Like, there was a million things happening, and then they kind of broke it down with these key characters at that point in time.
So also in this cast, we have Jobel and Tazen Becker. Now, what do you think of these two?
Oh, I love both of them. Just they were both so enthused in what they were doing. And Jobel, we find out quite a lot about Jobel, don't we? We was kind of on a bit of a drip feed about him. We know he's a bit of a womanizer.
Mm.
And we know that his hair isn't quite what it seems.
It's a wig.
It's a wig, I know. Mm. We told you. Sometimes there's spoilers on these programs. But no, Jobel was fascinating to me. I personally liked him. I particularly liked the moment when he actually bumped into the Doctor and tried to kill him
with
the statue. That was the cliffhanger on the first part of the story, which came across a little bit lame. But anyway, I'm getting completely over my head here.
Yeah.
Tazen Becker was... excellent. I loved her.
I reckon she was one of the secondary driving forces in this story. She was very vital, I think, in Davros's plan to overthrow Jobel.
Yeah, that's right, because we have to mention just how closely linked together Jobel and Tazen Becker were.
Yeah. Before this story, they were like peas in a pod. Like, we find out that there was a bit of a love relationship there. And that slowly unfolds, and we learn little nuggets of information, and we find out something kind of happened there. And then we find out through Davros that Jobel has found someone else. And then Tazen Becker...
she was not pleased about this. Oh my goodness. If looks can kill, I'm telling you that right now. And well, it turns out looks can kill.
Yeah, that death scene where she stabs Jobel with the syringe kind of...
I'm going to be honest, they were hinting at it, and I thought, you're not going to go there. And she did. And my hat was off to her. I wasn't wearing a hat at the time. But
Were you shocked?
I was pretty shocked.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the only stabbing scene we had in the whole episode either.
No, we had Orsini.
Orsini,
he came up and he gave Kara a bit of a stab.
Yeah, that's right. It was not quite in the heart, but it was in the chest.
It was. Now, what did you think of Orsini as a character?
We both commented that he was a bit like Jeffrey Rush.
We did, yeah.
He had one of those really interesting faces to look at. He'd been through a war. He had a bit of a dark past.
A bit like John Hurt almost. Yeah.
You know, weirdly, when he appeared on screen, I thought, oh, it's John Hurt. But then I realised quickly, no, that can't be a fact.
Yep.
He was good. I actually quite liked him. And I liked that henchman that was with him for most of the story.
I can't remember his name, right now.
I can't either. He got killed off too quickly.
He did,
but, he was
think that he looked like Manuel of Fawlty Towers.
Yeah, I remember. You mentioned that throughout the episode. Gosh, that's funny.
But yeah, I think with this character, while he was a good character, I think him and his henchmen could have had more to do.
I agree. I think because you had like Jobel and Co and all those other people, and you even had Natasha and something. Obviously, with this many characters, there's only so many that can get enough screen time. And I just felt that he was shoehorned in a little bit. He was just like a mercenary that didn't have a massive purpose, in my opinion.
I guess this is why, as we were saying before, it needs a third or fourth part.
It did. I agree. Yeah. But then again, do we lose quality? If we go to a third part...
would it be dragged out more unnecessarily?
Because the length was nice here. I never felt like I was getting bored, like I had to get up and eat some cake or...
with Terror of the Autons.
Oh, that's right. That was a bit of a session. But you can watch Terror of the Autons, which was episode 4, the previous one. A quick, cheap plug there. Mm. But, Tom, did you like the music score on this one?
I loved Roger Lim's music score, to be honest. I remember you were saying at the start you were kind of... not too sure about it. But then as the episode excelled, once we got to episode 2, it really lifted up. And I think it worked with this scenery of this story.
Oh, it very much did. Yeah. I think one of the reasons why I wasn't convinced at first is it felt a bit minimal. in a sense, especially I've been listening to so much Kev McCulloch and my brain was about to melt into the carpet. This actually felt quite calm and reserved.
Yeah.
But as you said, I think it aided the story quite well.
It did. It didn't need to be over the top. No. Like Kev McCulloch can be sometimes. Oh,
just a couple of times. Yeah.
But like if you listen to Dominic Glynn or Marquez, they have a very similar undertone that Roger Lim has as well here.
Yeah, for whatever reason, we rewound it at the end, was that last piece of music, just to finish off the episode. I just love that for whatever reason.
It was a nice little piece of music.
It was a nice little hymn to kind of give us hope before the Doctor tells us where we're going next, that never turns out to be anything.
Not to Blackpool, no.
Yeah, that's
right. We're going on trial.
Yeah. Now, take us through this. So, for those who aren't aware, at the end of this episode, the Doctor hints at the fact to Perry that they're going to Blackpool. Now, on the DVD release, he just says, "We're going to," and it just freeze frames and cuts and goes to black.
Yep.
So, they were going to Blackpool. Was this the go-to point for season 23 that didn't actually...
It was. It would have started with a story called The Nightmare Fair. I think it was by Nigel Fares. And it would have featured the return by... would have featured the return of the Celestial Toymaker, who was a First Doctor villain. And it would have been set in Blackpool, which would have been a massive sellout for Blackpool because they wanted to kind of sell out that area. And they had awesome stories planned for season 23.
Yeah, I'm going to say, you've sold me on that. I want to watch it.
They would have had the return of the Ice Warriors, and we would have seen the Rani and the Master working together with the Autons. Because there was just a missing opportunity there, and I was just so sad that I think it kind of went on trial in one way and another, both in real life and both on the show. Whilst I do like portions of Trial of a Time Lord, I think the original season 23 would have been better.
I just can't work it out. It's a head scratcher because Trial of the Time Lord, isn't it 16 parts? Or
14,
I stand corrected. 14 parts.
It's a long story.
You can't... We're not going to be able to watch that in one sitting.
No. I think the better way to look at Trial of a Time Lord is looking at an angle from being four completely different stories, but with that theme that it always comes back to the trial room on Gallifrey. But I guess that's a discussion for another day when we review.
I agree. Yeah, it's definitely a talking point, but it's just interesting to hear the fact that season 23 was meant to be completely different, a complete different change on it. Time for the production value. Did the set dressing? Did the ice outside... were you sold on this setting?
I was very heavily amused when you pointed out when they were outside Tranquil Repose. I think it was at the beginning of the second part, Jobel, the Doctor, and Perry walk away, and you could see someone in the glass building just walk into their office or something, if it was an office.
You were very pleased that I'd picked that up, but yeah. I thought it was a nice touch. I mean, we need to know that there's, you know, henchmen that are patrolling these borders, especially on Tranquil Repose, and I love that personally.
I do love the interior design of the dungeons, where it kind of goes down into Davros's lair, and I think one of my favourite rooms or places that we see is the lab that we see Natasha's father in.
Oh yes, yeah. That very dark scene.
Yeah,
yeah, that was very cool.
Now it was funny that you were saying to me that you thought that the hallways looked like they were off Paradise Towers.
I was losing my mind. Now, the last episode of Classic Doctor Who I watched personally, we will review it at some point in time, it was Paradise Towers. I only watched that episode about, I don't know, 4 days ago.
I watched it this morning.
You watched it this morning, yeah, because I told you to watch it, didn't I?
You did.
And I'm thinking, these hallways look very similar.
They do.
And then they have all these guards walking in similar uniforms. And
I guess it happens when you watch Classic Doctor Who.
I guess, it's all going to start running into each other over time.
Yeah.
But I just felt like going... You must not enter the Paradise Towers, Section 1, Guard 2, you know, all that kind of jargon. But luckily there were no, like, creepy old ladies featured in this episode.
Hungry!
But yeah, it was just one of those strange kind of coincidences that the two of just happened to see back-to-back
Yeah.
kind of mirrored each other in the production design sense.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on production value?
I actually really liked the change from the lab setting.
Yep.
And also where Davros was located, to the snow. I thought the snow really broke up the scenery for me in this episode. I think if it was 90 minutes just inside this really industrial-looking environment, I think I would have got a bit bored visually. My eyes would have started to get a bit bored with it.
Yeah.
But no, I love the to and from that we had. But once we got into part two, we kind of lost the snow. That kind of just disappeared.
Yeah. I also really liked Kara's office on her other home planet.
That was nice too. Yeah, that worked. I mean, there was nothing all that intricate happening like on the walls or anything like
that. It was very drawn back to basics, which I liked.
It was. You know, I was kind of getting a bit of a John Pertwee vibe from that room. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But, no.
A bit like Frontier in Space.
Yeah. So that was cool. I think there was enough to get this episode by production design-wise.
Yeah. Any more lowlights for you in this episode?
Anything? There are a few things that probably didn't work as well as they should.
Yeah.
You know, putting beside the fact that Colin Baker's attire is just atrocious. But I really got to stop harping on about that. Yeah,
I guess you're warm to it as you watch more of Colin Baker's run.
I think, for me, the lowlight has to come with the fact that Orsini was just had so much promise and he just didn't quite get there for me. I just felt he was just shoehorned in. And
although the scene where his leg gets blown off was quite memorable.
That was brutal. I couldn't believe that. Yeah, that was very much a talking point of the episode.
Definitely.
Also, Tommy's leg's blown off.
And I didn't realise.
No, you had no clue at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was just crazy. I wasn't expecting it. But as far as other things, I can tell you some highlights, but the lowlights, no, there's not that much to whinge about in this story, luckily. Oh, well, wait, the main lowlight, because I got all my anger out about it earlier, was the DJ. I hated the DJ. Get rid of that bloody DJ. I'm sick of the DJ. I want the DJ gone.
So if you were Eric Saverwood right now, you'd probably get rid of the DJ?
I'd get rid of the DJ. He'd be gone in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Maybe replace it with some voiceover work or something like that.
Yeah.
But, oh man. No. not a fan. As for some highlights, I loved how there were two Davroses. There was like a fake one.
Yeah.
And they shot it up.
That was a nice kind of sequence.
That was cool.
And then we saw him in the original kind of armchair that he's in.
Yes. Oh, I thought it was wicked. Mm. Yeah. What were some highlights and lowlights for you, Tom?
I definitely have to reiterate that scene with Natasha's father. It's probably my favourite scene.
Yes, you just loved it, didn't you?
Yeah. And I also really love just the last 20 or so minutes of episode 2.
Gee, wasn't it action-packed?
It was just amped up, like, Jobel died, they were going to set off the bomb, and everyone's running out. That's it in, like, the last 5 minutes that happened.
Yeah, that was incredible. That everybody, you know, was marching out of the building. Yeah. And
when we saw the rebel Daleks come back, the ones that we saw back in Resurrection of the Daleks, that was a nice kind of prologue into Remembrance of the Daleks, I think.
Yes, it was too. It kind of set it up nicely. And because I've actually seen that story, I could appreciate that quite a lot. Now, we've got to discuss a quick bit about the Daleks in this story.
We do.
How do you rank this Dalek story, firstly?
I definitely think the mythos of this story is intriguing. And I definitely think, whilst it could go completely wrong, if this story had a third part, the whole human Dalek thing could have been explored a little bit further.
Yeah, that's one thing I was, again, felt underdeveloped.
Yeah, I definitely think it's probably not the best. I enjoy it immensely. I definitely think the best Dalek story would be Genesis of the Daleks, which is in Tom Baker's first year. But as far as Dalek stories go, I like Revelation of the Daleks as much as the next person. So, I definitely enjoy it.
And this DVD can still be found at the shops.
At JB and ABC shop,
I was just there, you know, not long ago, having a bit of a look around, a bit of a squiz.
Yeah.
And I did find this at multiple shops.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in Revelation of the Daleks, Tom, are you going to say buy or skip?
I reckon say buy it. I wouldn't put it as your first Colin Baker story. I'd personally go for Mark of the Rani if you're going into Colin Baker blind, or Vengeance on Varus for that matter. But I reckon maybe you make this the third or fourth Colin Baker story you watch. Definitely don't go into Trial of a Time Lord blind.
So this is essential Colin Baker?
I believe so.
Oh, that's excellent. So, final thoughts, get a wrap up. What are you going to give this one, Tom? Out of 10.
I'm going to give this... it's hard to say. I think I'm on par a 6.5 or a 7.
Right, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to go a 7 on this one.
Yeah.
Reason being, I, as a viewing, a one-sitting type viewing, I personally really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I just felt there were so many interesting ideas that just never quite got there.
It really skimmed the surface.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. So as a whole, very entertaining, but at the same time, what could have been, in my opinion. This almost, definitely. Maybe if we got another part, this could have possibly been like an 8.5, a 9.
I reckon. Yeah, there are some stories that you can just watch all the way through and you'd be laughing, but there are other stories too that you kind of have to stop for a while, get up and walk around and kind of just mull it over, then come back to it maybe a day or so later and then watch the rest of it. But Revelation, you can watch it all in one sitting.
Yeah, it's an enjoyable ride too.
Yeah.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, that was our review of Revelation of the Daleks. And of course, you can find us at multiple locations. Tom, fill us in.
First of all, you can find us on Facebook at Who's to Review. You can also email us on whostoreview.who@gmail.com, where you can send us some fan mail, or you can submit a story that you'd like to be reviewed, or if you'd like to even be on the podcast one day, we may consider it. You can also find us on Blogspot at whostoreview.blogspot.com.au, and you can also find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.
That's right. So there's plenty of options. And of course, we want to grow this podcast as much as we can. If there's anyone you know that likes classic Doctor Who, feel free to share this with them. Hopefully they'll dig it. If they don't, well, you know, if you can't say anything nice, don't say it at all.
Just tell your grandparents. They'd love it.
Yeah, let them know. And as for the email, even if you just have any question, you watched a story, something didn't make sense, maybe one of us might know. We might be able to
further investigate.
Yeah, we'd like to investigate. We're always up for a chat. So in future episodes, there will be responses to email questions.
Yes.
For now, we're going to say thank you all again for listening. We very much appreciate the support. And what will next week hold? Well, we're just going to have to wait and see.
We're going to have to go back to the TARDIS archive and find out for ourselves.
Oh, gosh, I'm looking forward to it, Tom. It's always just...
It's always
a fun ride. So for now, ladies and gentlemen, when you're feeling blue, watch some classic Doctor Who. Take care, everybody, and look forward to... I was about to say see you again, but we don't actually see these people, do we?
No, we don't even hear them.
Yeah,
they hear us. Yeah.
Oh, man, what a revelation of the Daleks. So until next time, take care, guys.
Goodbye.